here in Slovenia, it seems people like mountains and nature and mountaineering and walking and trekking. So I have good news for you, because this book today gives us a map for going to some of the best and most beautiful places in all the universes, where we are finding the highest treasure. So this is something we usually like to find a treasure. This is oftentimes a dream of a person, to just find a treasure. Anyone of you ever found some money? Depends how much, you know, like 1 cent, is it money or not? Yes. Sometimes you find more, right? Anybody found something like equivalent of 10 euros or more? Okay. Oh.
I found a treasure in a cave.
Really?
Yeah. Old money.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. How much?
Thousands of Slavian.
Wow.
I don't know.
That sounds interesting.
A lot.
No wonder you are so happy. Looking so happy. In my childhood, I remember my father, in his library, he had some very rare books and also some copies of some very old books. Those days it was not easy to have a copy of some book, because he was working in a special place. He could make copy of any books, and that was a copy of it was a registry of treasures of the Ukrainian Cossack Republic. So that was hundreds and hundreds of years ago, and they kept a registry, and it was a fascinating reading. You know, you would open it, and it would say that you go to a village called New Peter or something, and then there near the church, from the church you go north, you walk 100 steps, then you turn right, walk 20 steps, and then you dig 4 steps down, and there is a pot with 2,000 golden coins. And you read it and you think, my God, where is that village? Maybe I should go. Of course, already everybody went everywhere. That's why they published that book. But it's certainly fascinating. So it's very important not just to know that the treasure is there, but also to know where exactly it is hidden. And sometimes the description has to be decoded. Like, I think in the 60s or 70s, there was one very famous movie. It's a mad, 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 mad world, if anybody remembers. And the director of this movie said that he regrets that he said that he used only 4 times mad, that he should have added more. Anybody, if you saw that, you may remember that there was some difference of understanding where exactly the treasure is hidden. So to find the treasure, it's important to have a map. So the Nectar instruction is a very precise map to find the highest top treasure. And since you are a tretidetnik, so you know what's the top treasure in all the universes. What's the top treasure? What's the highest achievement and reward you can find?
Krishna Prema.
Krishna Prema, yes, very good. And there is a whole lake of Krishna Prema. So This is a lake of Radhakunda. Radhakunda. So it's famous. And you can see that Radhakund is mentioned in the last three verses of this Nectar of Instruction. So verses 9, 10, and 11. Three verses of a very short work that are dedicated to describing Radhakund and comparative value of Radhakund to all the other holy places. We have a sacred geography here. We have a sacred hierarchy of sacred places. So we have verse 9 saying that Vaikuntha is higher than this spiritual world, is higher than the material world, because it's the world of eternal life and full spiritual knowledge and existence. But higher than Vaikuntha, just any generic, any of the billions and trillions of generic spiritual planets where one Lord is present in different forms, there is Vrindavan. So that we know. But higher than Vrindavan is Govardhan, it says. Because in, it says, first higher than, Vaikuntha is Mathura. Vaikuntha janito vara Madhupuri. Madhupuri is, Mathura. This is where Krishna performs his pastimes of birth and some other pastimes. And in spiritual world there is a place also, Goloka Vrindavan has three parts. Vrindavan, Mathura and Dwaraka. So, Mathura is higher than just Vaikuntha spiritual world. Higher is Vrindavan. Vaikuntha janito vara Madhupuri, tatrapi rasotsavat Vrindaranya. Vrindavan is the place where Krishna performs his rasa dance. That's why it's higher, certainly. And there are different ways to understand Vrindavan. There is one way to say Vrindavan, meaning the whole Braj Mandala. Mandala is a circle. Just like this is supposed to symbolize the nine islands, Navadvipa Mandala. Mandala means a circle. So Brajamandala is a circle of Krishna's pastimes. So sometimes the whole Brajamandala is called Vrindavan, forest of Vrinda. But sometimes Vrindavan refers to just one of 12 forests in Vrindavan. This is one place where Krishna performed his boyhood pastimes. And also it's a forest where Krishna performs Rasotsava, the festival of rasa dance. Rasa dance is dance with all the gopis. In Vrindavan, this is the spring rasa dance. This is now spring coming. So this is the festival of love. And this is the festival where, unlike on other occasions, each and every gopi is invited. All the gopis are called by Krishna with his flute. By the name, each one by the name. He plays whoo, and everybody hears whatever they hear. You know, just Ramana hears Ramana, and Premanjari hears Premanjari. That's his super expert mobile. You know, he just plays. And other people don't hear. Like the older gopas, they don't hear. It's just, you know, just like mobile. You call somebody, you know, the person, it rings at the person, but not nobody else. So it's also personalized. And so this is why Vrindavan is higher than Mathura. But higher than Vrindavan is Govardhan, Rupa Goswami explains, because this is a place where all the Brijbasis were invited. This is one of the few Leelas in which every Brijbasi is participating, because otherwise sometimes Krishna is with the boys but not with the girls, and sometimes he's with the girls but then he's not with the boys, or he's with the parents but not with the boys, and so from time to time somebody is missing him. But here for 7 days he holds Govardhan, so they are all together with him. And also Govardhan is a place where he performs some more intimate rasa lila. But higher than that is Radhakund. Radhakund is the place where Radharani, the epitome of all love for Krishna, the source of all prema, of all rasa, with her very intimate friends reside. So this is the top treasure, the top place, the top destination where we want to get. So how do you get there? So we need a map, a path, and a road to get there. So how do you get there? So this we will discuss here. What is the path that leads one to that wonderful place? And Upadeshamrita, Nectar of Instruction, is the step-by-step description of this path. And this is the genius of Rupa Goswami. He is one of the six Goswamis there. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he appeared, he deputed Rupa Goswami to write books. And he wrote wonderful books. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Ujjwala Nilamani are the most famous ones. And Stavamala, Padyavali. He wrote many amazing, super wonderful books. He was top poet before he became monk. He was minister of finance in the government of Nawab Hussein Shah. So he was he was a successful person in each imaginable and unimaginable way, and he managed to retire from that peacefully. His brother couldn't. He was put in prison because he needed them. He forced Nawab Hussein Shah in Bengal, forced them in his service by blackmailing them. He said, "I will kill the Vaishnavas if you don't come to work for me." So he had to, nowadays people would kill to become a minister of finance or prime minister or to keep it. They didn't want to become and they didn't want to stay. And when he retired, Rupa Goswami, it's described, he had two full boats of gold that were just savings that he had. But he gave up everything and he became a completely renounced mendicant in Vrindavan. And so he wrote a very detailed Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu book about Bhakti, path of devotional service. And then he condensed this into just 11 verses. And this is even more complicated. You know, like Abraham Lincoln was asked, how much time do you need? He was famous as a speaker. They asked him, how much time do you need to prepare a 5-minute speech? And in America, everybody, I think by heart, many know Gettysburg Address by him. It's studied. Any rhetorics or speech course will have his 5-minute speech at Gettysburg. And so he said 6 hours. And apparently, yes, he spent 6 hours preparing that very short 5-minute speech. So then they said, okay, and how much time do you need to prepare, 1 hour speech? 1 hour, he said, well, about 2 hours. Really? How much time do you need to prepare a 3-hour speech? He said, 3-hour speech? Oh, I don't need any preparation. I can start now. So to make something short requires more expertise. They say that's the meaning of sutra. Sutra are condensed, very short writings. There is an English word called which is terse. Terse means very short. Very short. So Rupa Goswami is super expert. That's also the expertise for students, that you are supposed to be able to zip it down, to condense things. So you listen and don't write down everything, but write down just the key points, and then you unzip them, and it's easier to remember. So here, it's amazing. In the whole path, everything about bhakti, from perfection to the very first steps, is zipped into 11 verses. And this is the map which leads us to the lake of Prema. And there we have This is hierarchy. By the way, the word hierarchy, I could just use hierarchy, because hierarchy means, you know, sacred, like hieroglyph, and hierarchy means sacred order. It's already sacred, but we don't usually know this. So it's actually hierarchy of sacred places, levels, practices mentioned, also devotees. So that you, like, if you go to the mountains, you want to know which mountain is higher, which mountain is lower, yes, and whatever climbing, you know, if you're climbing, then there will be super heavy, intermediate, super easy, there will be different degrees of routes. So here we have different levels for that. So where does it start? It's quite amazing that this path starts in the heart. It doesn't start in some external place. The path to this highest treasure starts with our becoming aware of the six currents. Vega means current and urge. What do we have in? Fortunately, we have Upadeshamrit in. It's personally signed. Tezhnya. Okay. Who has this book? Who does not have this book? Okay, so please get it as soon as possible. This is a big treasure. So Tezhnya. So Tezhnya, it's natural that these are connected. When there is a current, a stream, a force that's flowing in the heart, pushing us, that's urge, Tezhnya, right? It pushes us somewhere. So there are these six currents in the heart which carry us in some wrong direction. They force us to do things we don't usually would choose to do if we are in our proper mind. So these are we have six things. This is verse 1. So what are the six things? Again, as I mentioned when we spoke about Upanishad, there are just 18 plus 1 verses, which is not so much easy to learn, and then you know the whole Shastra. So here, it's even less. It's 11. So you just learn 11 verses and then you know the whole Shastra by heart. And it's useful because it's a map, treasure map. Yes, it's very helpful if you have the treasure map, if you know the treasure map by heart to find the, to have the directions to find the way to that treasure. So Vacho Vegam, Manasa Krodha Vegam, Jiho Vegam, Udaropasta Vegam. What are the six urges that push us and drag us? Anybody remembers? Speech, yes. We can't stop speaking. If we don't find anybody who would listen to us, we get children and then we talk to children. So, vacho, speech. Then, mind. Even if I don't speak outside, inside. We argue with ourselves or with somebody. Anger. So these are more subtle. And then we have tongue. We like tasty things. Belly. We want a lot of them. And genitals. Or sex. So these are six urges that push us. And this verse says, etan vegan yo vishahet adhira sarvam apimam prithivim sashishyat. So one who is able to tolerate these six urges is eligible to teach the whole world, to become guru of the whole world. This is very interesting. So first, it's interesting that this is the verse beginning this shastra, because for everything you need a guru. It's much faster and much better with a guru. But to get a guru, you need to be honest. How not to be cheated, how not to be misled. We have to be ourselves honest. Right? So therefore, we ourselves are practicing purity. So when we practice purity, we will recognize someone who is also pure and who leads us to a pure goal. So on both sides, this is helpful. This is helpful to recognize who is a guru, and it is helpful that we ourselves are practicing, and then we will not be misled. You have some comment?
Yeah.
Question?
I was just wondering, actually, because in what sense is anger meant? Because isn't anger actually a product of our mind? So.
Yes. Okay. So why do we have two instead of one? Yes. Because it's the most destructive. Yes, you are correct. If we control the mind, we will also be able to we will be able to control everything. Basically, it's all coming from the mind. But mind is a machine. Mind is a machine which produces these unnecessary or whatever desires, and we just identify with these different things. But anger is the most dangerous and destructive thing. So therefore, Krishna says that anger is one of the things you have to be able to conquer first. And then you conquer also less dangerous things that mind produces. There is an inscription on an ancient temple, Tayumanavar in South India, where it says, "You can control a mad elephant. You can shut the mouth of the bear and the tiger. You can ride a lion. You can play with the cobra. By alchemy, you can make your livelihood. You can wander through the universe incognito. You can make vassals of the gods, subjugate gods, demigods. You can be ever youthful. You can walk on water and live on in fire. But control of the mind is better and more difficult." It is in the 11th canto, it is said that many people who crossed the ocean of lusty desires, desiring for so many things in this world, they have crossed, they are free, drowned in the reprehensible, pity, useless puddles of anger. They were able to avoid trying to enjoy things, but then they become angry and lose all the, they misuse all the power, right? So this is one of the manifestations of that. So this is where we start the journey. We started in the heart, and it's very interesting that this verse says, it's not that you must be free from these things. It says that you, Vishaheta, you tolerate. You know how to tolerate. Tolerate means you do not identify and you do not follow these urges. That's all. And then if you do that, if you stop following, that's the first thing, identifying and meditating on them, contemplating, these things. Think, so redirect, refocus your mind. So there, from the very beginning, you have a big secret. Because mind is, it's impossible to control. It's so strong. It's Krishna's energy. I am so small, and Krishna's energy is so big. How can I control the mind? So the answer is we don't. No problem. Just say, okay. Don't argue with the mind. I have a friend who was abandoned by his wife. How did that happen? First, she tried to push him to do different things and enjoy him, and somehow or other that what he was... Actually, he's an extremely advanced personality. He's definitely a yogi from before, from many lifetimes. He's extremely peaceful, extremely tolerant. So then she started arguing with him. And he would not argue back. He would not quarrel back. He would just say, okay. So she left him. Because that's too much, you know? Not only she cannot control him in some desirable way, she cannot control him even in the undesirable way. She cannot provoke him even for arguing. He's not angry, you know. It's useless. Completely useless. Anyway, now he has a very nice wife. Who is also apparently a yogi from before. And this is one secret that Prabhupada gives in the fifth canto story of Jad Bharat, that this is a secret weapon for the mind. You ignore the mind. It means you do not fight back, you do not fight with the mind. You just say, okay, and focus on something positive. This is also the beauty of bhakti, because every other path has to grapple, has to fight, has to struggle with the mind. But in bhakti, we are not—it's not a negative path; it's a positive path. We are trying to switch to something nice, to something good, to something positive, and all the negative things they fall off automatically, just naturally. You know, this is just the natural result of switching to the positive things. This is the secret of bhakti. Can I ask you to hold it? Just watch. You see, Ushka had a pen and a notebook in her books. Yes, and maybe she was attached to this. It's a nice notebook. I can see. It's a nice picture. But if I give something else, then she puts down the pen and she puts down, and the notebook is away. See? I don't have to say anything about the pen and the notebook. It happens automatically, right? If you sorry for everybody on this spot. But this is the principle, you know. We are offered something wonderful. We are offered bhakti, and then automatically the mind puts down all the unnecessary things. It's helpful to know. It's helpful to know what are the unnecessary things, and we are told. But how do we have the four principles, regulative principles. But how do we avoid them? By taking something better. Prabhupada gives the example, child eating dirt, mother gives him sweets. Right? And then something tasty. So then the child is distracted from that. So the mind works the same way. So that's where we start. Now then, the next are two verses describing two things which can destroy bhakti. So we can say that the first, when this is where we find the path, it's from inside. This is where we find the path. We have to find the door under these streams by not identifying. And then when we have found the path of bhakti, then there is a danger. There is a there are two very nasty bushes which have thorns and which are poisonous. A couple years ago, I remember there was some plague in Ukraine. There were people were warned that near rivers there is a Siberian borshchovik or something. I don't know something. It's a plant that you touch. And just by touching the plant, the body becomes black, and the person, if it touches a lot of the body, then people have to be hospitalized and in intensive care unit. They're poisonous just by touch. So it's helpful if you know how it looks like. Right? So it's helpful to avoid. So we are told from the very beginning, six things which can destroy our practice of bhakti. So these are six... This is the beginning. Six poisonous things. So what are these six poisonous things? Atyahara, that's over, we can say collecting, but it also is overeating unnecessarily. Over endeavoring. Over-endeavoring. Prajalpa means mundane topics or material topics. And the most dangerous of these is gossiping, criticizing, offending other practitioners, because it works in a very subtle, poisonous ways. When we criticize, the other day we heard that when we criticize somebody, we take their bad karma. Actually, there is a statement in Garuda Purana that Papa Gananam, one who counts somebody else's sins, if Yamaraj says, the god of punishment, he says that if for those who count other people's sins, then if the sins were true, they get the same punishment, and if the sins were imagined, then they get double punishment for that imagined sin. They point out, and the sinner on the other hand has his sin diminished in half. Hare Krishna. So this is okay. Material topics, but all the material topics will be detrimental. Niyamagraha. Then the other one is very interesting. Niyamagraha has a double meaning. Is not following the rules or following them mechanically. So not following rules, helpful rules, or following them dogmatically, formally. Without understanding the purpose. And these are two. Then improper association with people who are very mundane and very attached to some mundane things, who will try to drag us into that. And association doesn't mean that we neglect or are harsh on them or whatever, or we don't help them, especially if we are connected somehow, you know, with them, like family members or something, or relatives. It just means we do not enter into close spiritual exchanges with them. We don't try to share their spiritual understanding and share our spiritual understanding with them if they are not sincerely interested. Yeah. So we are kind, we are helping in whatever way is necessary, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains this in Jaivadharma. And there is a whole book on these first two verses, verse 2 and 3 by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, called Bhakti Aloka, where he gives a whole... on each of these points, he writes an essay, or he writes a thesis, expanding in detail what does it mean. So how shall we put it? Association, mundane association, undesirable association, improper association, bad association. I can write bad association, but you know, it's to make it very, it's very short to write. So that's why I would prefer to write it. But please understand that it doesn't mean that we call some people good and some people bad. And greed, laulyam. So these are the six poisonous plants. And just like in Upanishad, there are three main categories. Like for greed, Bhaktisiddhanta ji gives. These are if this sounds too complicated, don't try to remember this. But for those of you who have who know the meaning of these terms, then it will be easy to remember. You can just say karma, akarma, and vikarma. So vikarma means sinful. You know, people who do really bad things. So that's, you know, drunkards. I mean, it's even dangerous to associate with them. But and topics and being greedy for sinful things. So for all of these things, so being greedy for sinful enjoyments. So vikarma. Then karma, pious enjoyments. It's pious. It's okay. It's no problem. But it's mundane. You know, it's aiming only at the higher planets of this world, being attracted to some nice things, but in this world. So it can be very attractive, it can be very beautiful, but still, if we become greedy for that, it will hamper us on our path. We will stop going. And the third, so vikarma and karma, and then so-called akarma. This means like Mayavadis. These are the impersonalists, or people who try to kill God while you know, professing to be spiritualists. That God has no legs, no face, no nothing, and they just want to merge or whatever. So these are spiritualists with imperfect understanding. Spiritualists. That. If we are greedy for things spiritual, like mystic powers, yes, we want to control things, we want to fulfill our desires, so we want to, like my favorite is that I would like to have, is moving in space, you know. Time would also be good, but at least in space, you know, like... You know, like in the morning, you chant your japa in front of Govardhan, Hare Krishna, Hare. Then you, for lecture, you go to, I don't know, Los Angeles and hear, I don't know, Dravida Prabhu or, I don't know, somebody, Hridayananda or somebody. Then for the lecture. Then for prasadam, you go to Ljubljana. Then, that would be... So if I'm greedy for things like this, that can hamper my progress. But there are five healing herbs, five, what do you call them, amulets, five... how do you call it? Zelishcha. And mystical protective... Okay. Yeah. It can be combined. True. Yes. It can be both a herb and an amulet. You know, it can be a herb in a pouch and kept somewhere. You know? Basically, we have like this, right? This is a tree, but it has a mystic power of protection. Tulsi. Yes. So these are six healing herbs, cures. So what are they? There are three attitudes. They are three attitudes and three actions. are very helpful. So this is Utsahan, enthusiasm. And Prabhupada gives a very beautiful definition. Endeavor made with intelligence is enthusiasm. So it includes intelligence, it includes action. Like, for example, depression is always passive. It's always it always lacks action and movement. Always. And funnily enough, just adding movement, very simple movement, can be as effective as drugs. Antidepressive drugs. See, antidepressive drugs are purported to have 60% success rate, and 60% is the minimum improvement that is obtained just by proper exercise for clinically depressed people. But it doesn't have the side effects. So, endeavor, Prabhupada says, with enthusiasm, with intelligence. So, my Guru Maharaj, Gopal Krishna Maharaj, oftentimes points out that to have enthusiasm, you have to have a very clear picture of your goal. A very clear picture of your goal. At this point, I oftentimes make a humorous reference to one test by Niranjana Swami. I don't know if it's still current, but this is what he used to do about 10 years ago. He said he has a simple test to determine whether a brahmachari should get married or not. So in a like one grihastha, I remember in early days, he said that grihastha's family people, they have so many problems. They have so many problems. You know, they have to earn money, protect health, protect family, get the house, so many concerns. But brahmacharis have only one problem. Should I get married or not? So sometimes they come to Niranjana Swami and they ask him, should I get married? So he has, in those days, I think it's developed over the years, but he said that he has one simple question that settles it. He asks the person, what color is her sari today? If the person knows the answer, then Niranjana Swami says, yeah, maybe you should get married. Not necessarily that person, but... And if the person doesn't know, who, what, whose, then, okay, maybe that's just, guy ate too much paneer or something. Anyway, so the point is, it has to be specific. Strong emotions are specific. Strong desires are specific. And everybody who deals with advertisement, they know it. They have to put some specific details. new car, and they have size so many meters, or it runs, it uses just 3 liters for 100 kilometers. One detail, 3 liters for 100 kilometers. And they start thinking, my God, my car uses 3.3. liters, I should change it. How much I could spare, if I have this. Some detail, Right? Same with, and then you get enthusiasm. So this is just a short class, but I usually urge the students to write down some specific points about the goal. How do you see your success in spiritual life? How do you see your success in spiritual life? What some specific details? Because we all know that our goal is Krishna Prema. What is Krishna Prema for you? We are all different. For somebody, it's Krishna talking to me from the heart. For somebody, it's Krishna embracing me. For somebody, it's seeing Krishna every second and in every heart. For everybody, it's different. This you can remember. Actually, this is the definition of sadhana or practice, is practice with the goal in view. So as we chant, as we sing, as we associate, it will transform our practice if we remind ourselves of the goal and keep it as specific as possible. So this is crucial for practice, and so this is one of the I've written healing charms, because charm has, you know, it's both a herb and an amulet and so many things. Works like a charm. How would you translate this? Char, anyway. You have this word, right? So sounds also similar. So then next one is conviction. Conviction. Again, this is not something, again, in Krishna consciousness, faith or belief is not something that's just happens, that I just happen to believe or not believe, but this is your decision, your choice. Prabhupada says there is no question of faith. It's a question of knowledge. Yeah? And amazingly enough, I found there is a video on YouTube of Carl Gustav Jung, who is saying this exactly same thing. He was asked, do you believe in God? He said, believe in God? Of course not. I don't believe in God. I know God exists. I know God is there. It's not a question of belief. I know. Right? It's a question of knowledge. It's a question of choice, of your goal in your existence. If you set a high transcendent goal, that's your decision, your conviction, and the belief or faith or the mind will gradually also reorient, even if you are struggling with that for some time. By the way, somebody said recently, I heard, that an atheist has to be absolutely certain that God is not there, because if he has even a smallest doubt, then he is a theist with doubts. He just has doubts. He's a theist with doubts.
Is that agnostic?
Well, agnostic by definition is one big doubt. You know, he just says, I don't know. That's the point. He says, I don't know. All right, so conviction, patience, being ready to persevere, and sometimes to continue as much as it takes. Then, so these are three moods. In the introduction, in the preface, there's a very, just two-page, one-page preface Prabhupada gives, and he says, one's advancement in Krishna consciousness depends on one's attitude. Depends on one's attitude. So do we want to advance? Do we want to advance? So it depends on your attitude. From says... Окей, ви є од нашої мисельності. Є відвісно, коліко би ми напрядували в заведенню Кришни. Attitude. So these are three attitudes, and then there are actions. So tat karma pravartanat, Prabhupada explains these are nine practices: hearing, chanting, remembering, praying, practices of Krishna consciousness. And then two more: sangatya tyagat sato vrite. One is choosing one's association carefully, avoiding it's similar to this, avoiding danger, unfavorable association, and following the path of saints, following saints. So these are six healing herbs and healing charms that transform our life and bring success to our practice. Now the next one, the next verse, so this is verse, that was verse 2, this is verse 3. And verse, so it says, associating with devotees, following saints, associating with devotees. And verse 4 gives six exchanges with devotees. Okay, how do I make it? Okay, these are devotees, and there are six exchanges. Dadati pratigrihnati, guhyama kyati prichati, bhunkte bojayate chayvasha, dvida pratilakshanam. Love between devotees is exchanged, developed and exchanged in six ways. Giving gifts, accepting gifts. Some yogis refuse to accept any gifts from anybody at all. Bhakta will accept gifts from devotees and asking questions and sharing one's realizations and giving food and accepting food, feeding and eating. So these are six exchanges between devotees which increase, deepen loving relationships. So this is very important for advancement, to have proper relationships in devotional service. Then we have verse 5 describing how we respect different devotees. Okay, so here's a devotee offering obeisances to different devotees. So three categories of devotees are described, and it is mentioned that you seek friendship and association with one who is free from criticism, who knows the science of bhakti, and who is fixed in devotional service, so that you can then one who worships the Lord and is in the parampara, in the line, then we offer obeisances physically, and one who at least chants Hare Krishna one time. Even one Krishna. Then we respect at least in our heart. So there is no category which we can disrespect. So that's more of the external relationship. And now, I often say that this is the mountain pass. Big, important border into more advanced practices. So this is verse 6. This is similar to that, but it says that we are offering our that we don't look at the external faults of any devotees. We don't look, and it mentions not only the bodily faults, but even faults in the character, which can be carried over from before. Like, you know, somebody has this character, so it will not happen immediately that the character will change. So we don't have to condemn such person. So it speaks about more subtle. This is external behavior. And this, we can say, this is how you, in your heart, that you are respectful. How do you show respect? I don't know. Again, we can... Namaskar. Again. So you're offering obeisance again to different devotees. So this is in your eyes. In your eye, by your eyes, this is how you see different devotees. Yeah, you can make it an eye. So you look with love at everybody. Which is rich. You look at all of them with love. You don't criticize. Something like that. So, only after this is described have we a mention of the great nectar of the holy name. The holy name. It says we may not have a taste, like if somebody has jaundice, the person with jaundice may not feel the sweet taste. It's a tropical jaundice. One doesn't have the sweet tastes bitter. But sweet is the food and cure and medicine for the liver, which produces that disease. So if we have the disease of ignorance, avidya, pitta, then the whole world looks yellow, the eyes are yellow, and the tongue is yellow-tasted. I mean, it has the yellow taste, it doesn't taste sweet, it tastes bitter. But if we continue regularly chanting Adarad with respect and carefully, attentively, then we get the nectar. This is the nectar verse. This is verse 7. And Bhanu Swami points out something very interesting. He says that our main practice of chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, is discussed only after verse 6, which a genius, brilliant Rupa Goswami is not doing by accident. So it means that it will work, this nectar will work after these other things are in place. So the main, so this border here, this mountain pass, which from after which everything is moving differently, this is having respectful outlook upon all devotees, upon everybody. So that's the key to unlocking the nectar. And then with nectar, things change. Everything changes. So verse 8 describes spontaneous. Now it flows. So verse 8 describes the Raganuga practice, which has three points there. So it's spontaneous. So our heart is pure. Therefore, in such a pure heart, there can awaken our true attraction to some specific place in Vrindavan, to some specific role in Vrindavan. So verse 8 is three things. This is one thing is the essence of all advice, upadesha saram, is that this you can do 24/7 all the time. You engage sukirtanano in remembering Krishna, chanting about Krishna with full taste and attraction. Nicely, Prabhupada says, sukirtanano, you remember, chant and speak and remember about Krishna all the time, and it's no longer a problem because you have taste. Then it's in Vrindavan. So that means, this is one thing. Another thing is, it's Vrindavan. So it doesn't mean physically, but you are there in your spirit. And also Vrindavan vision means seeing everybody with love, seeing the good side of every personality. So that's Vrindavan vision. And technically what makes Raganuga, Raganuga, Anuga means following. So that's following a person. Okay, these are footsteps. These are footsteps. I'm not an artist, so I will have to explain, you know. So you are following a person in Vrindavan. Maybe some girl who is serving Krishna. Yeah? Because you know this is my eternal attraction. And then from there it all goes based on inspiration, taste, and spontaneous attraction. Hare Krishna. This is the map leading us to the treasure. Questions, points, comments?
I have a question from the verse number one.
Yes, please.
Actually, what is the difference between over-collecting and greed?
Okay, this is two. Over-collecting and greed, yes.
Connected,
yes, they are connected. That will, greed is subtle, and over-collecting is the gross manifestation of that subtle greed. Yes, and it will also be explained in that same three categories. It can be just overeating. It can be, so that's vikarma, like improper action. Then karma, it's over collecting pious activities to go to and enjoy. That's one explanation, yes? And akarma, so-called spiritualism, that will be over collecting some spiritual powers and spiritual rewards in that sense. So that will be the that will be a manifestation of these subtle desires.
For example, if you're collecting some stamps or something at home, that doesn't fall into that category, or it's...
Whatever. That's a first for me. Not mentioned in the Shastra. If it distracts you, if these are stamps on letters from devotees with whom you discuss Krishna consciousness, in anything there has to be healthy detachment, even in spiritual progress. Sometimes we are too greedy for spiritual advancement, and that in turn makes us depressed, disturbed, anxious, even in the best of the desires. We are still recommended patience or tolerance or being steady. With enthusiasm means clear goal. We keep, we continue proper on a proper path, but with also healthy detachment. So there is a good balance in everything. Something else?
If somebody criticizes you.
Somebody criticizes us.
Us.
Then we can do several things. We can. It depends on the specific situation. What is it? Is it if it doesn't disturb your life, doesn't affect your life negatively, then you can just think it purifies me, it removes my bad karma. It because they, you know, by criticizing they remove, they take away your bad qualities and bad karma. Yes, according to different descriptions. If this is a devotee who just is mistaken, then you can discuss, start some good relationship with that devotee to stop, so that they don't take too much of your bad karma and do not degrade. Yeah. So it depends on the specific situation. If it doesn't create obstacles for you, then you can tolerate and see maybe you can improve in some ways. Take this as some stimulus for improvement. Bhaktisiddhantaji, one person who criticized him all the time, died, and he said, "My only friend died." It was not happy. But if it is unhealthy, so then it depends. Like some people have a very unhealthy addiction to fantasized criticisms. It's like practically a psychological problem sometimes. So in that sense, in that case, sometimes they recommend some assertive speech where we say, "This is not what I did. This is not what I meant," and we correct the misconception of the person. So even that can be done if this is like our relative or something, and we need to explain that this is not what I meant. I meant this thing. Okay. The other one.
I would like to ask, how exactly does Niyamagraha have negative effect on us? How does it work?
Well, obviously, if we don't follow some rules, then we don't advance, right? We don't chant, for example, don't do something, then it slows down. We become neglectful of more and more important rules, and then it drags us down. And if we follow just out of formality, dogmatically, it also removes taste. It kills the taste. Yeah? Acting mechanically kills the taste, and then the next stage very often can be that we also stop following these rules because there is no taste. So both are dangerous according to Rupa Goswami. And it's quite interesting how he put both into the same word, niyamagraha, because niyamagraha is a combination of two, niyama-agraha and niyama-agraha. And they mean two sides. So proper balance is required for everything. Also, rules means, it's explained, there is a whole big chapter in Bhakti Aloka of Bhaktivinoda Thakur where he explains that rules means rules suitable for your level. Yes, and so following rules suitable for our level, that's virtue. And following rules not suitable for our level, that's vice or sin. Whether it's a higher rule or a lower rule, even following some rules that are lower than required for us, that's a drawback, that's a defect. Or something that we are not ready yet for also will be a drawback. So both of this is where, first of all, guidance and honesty are required. And so, may I, before we stop, can I ask you again to turn to your neighbor and choose two of your favorite healing charms and two of your favorite brambles, favorite thorns, or poisonous plants. that you have to deal with to advance in your life. Can you please choose two most helpful from verse 3 and two most dangerous for you personally?